Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. Joining me on the exchange to discuss the Oregon election results is Dirk Vanderhart. He covers politics and government for OPB. Welcome.
Hey, good morning.
Well, before we get into Oregon politics, I want to start at the top of the ticket and with the elephant in the room, the big elephant. What are your thoughts?
I assume you're referring to President Trump winning re-election.
That's it.
My thoughts are we knew that this was going to come down to a handful of swing states nationally, and all the polling showed that it was going to be extremely close, and it seems as the votes are being tallied that it wasn't, in fact, quite as close as that. I think there will be a lot of dissections in the days to come about who voted which way and why. It sort of feels like this is an electorate that was craving more change than they felt the Democrats were offering in this election. And so that's the way it went. Feels like a really good night for national Republicans last night. And yet in Oregon, just to sort of segue, we kind of saw what we always see in Oregon, which is the Democrats virtually winning every race that they were targeting or being on track to win many of those races right now.
So up and down the ticket, did the election turn out the way you expected here?
Here, pretty much, yeah. We are still waiting on the results of a very close congressional race that stretches from Portland to Bend, the 5th. That's too close to call at this point. There are a number of other races that are also pretty close. Some agencies haven't called, but really look like Democrats are going to prevail there, at least in Congress. The ballot measures are always a crapshoot, but nothing super surprising there. And we certainly didn't see any sort of red wave in terms of Republican unexpected wins in the legislature or statewide office. Again, this is a pretty nuts and bolts Oregon election this year.
So what were some of the notable outcomes?
Yeah, well, let's talk about, statewide office. I think we had three open statewide seats this year, which were attorney general, secretary of state, and state treasurer. Democrats fielded some veteran folks for all three of those, felt like they had really good campaigns. I think the most interesting for a lot of people was the attorney general's race, because that featured a former Democrat and former House Speaker Dan Rayfield against Will Lathrop, who is a former prosecutor, someone that I think many folks would point to as very experienced, had a sort of wealth of experience, as I say, doing the kinds of things many people might want an attorney general to do. And it was really sort of speaking to Oregonians' worries about crime or disorder or drugs or homelessness. So there was a question there about how dissatisfied the electorate was going to be. Would they opt to go with a Republican because they aren't in love with what they're seeing, out their front doors? And we just didn't see that. It looks like Dan Rayfield will win this race. In fact, Will Lathrop has conceded it. So the Democrats have prevailed there. And then, the races for Secretary of State and Treasurer were a lot less competitive. We saw Democrats running strong races, spending money, doing the things that Democrats typically do here. And we had, I would say, some more marginal Republican candidates who weren't raising and spending a lot of money to sort of get their voice out there. And so, they were widely expected to lose last night, and that's what we're seeing as well. I can keep going, but if you would like to focus on any other thing or ask follow-ups, please let me know.
No, I'm very much interested in the kinds of notable outcomes that you're interested in that you see across the state. I know there was a county clerk race in, I think it was Douglas County, and I thought that was interesting.
And I will be honest with you, Mike, I have not seen coverage of that race or covered it. So I apologize. I'll try to bone up for next time we talk. Let's talk about statewide ballot measures, though, because there were a couple of really notable ones. I think the one probably that was most, front and center for voters was this Measure 118. This was a proposal to hike taxes, pretty big tax hike on large corporations in the state to the tune of around $6 billion or more a year. And the big idea there was not that the state would be using that money, but that the state would be collecting that money and then distributing it out to every Oregon resident. So whether you are a newborn baby or someone in a retirement home and anyone in between, as long as you live in Oregon, under this measure, you would have gotten the check every single year or a tax credit. I mean, this is something that in an age of high inflation, I think there was a notion could have been very, very palatable to voters. $1,600.
Is that similar to what Andrew Yang, when he was running for president, was talking about?
Not dissimilar.
Universal
yes.
basic income?
Correct. Yep. It is a form of universal basic income. Now, the $1,600 checks that were being sort of touted under Measure 118 aren't the sort of, you know, larger levels of income that typically get talked about with universal basic income, which is often about sort of helping people meet the staples of their daily life. This would have been less than that, but still money and money that supporters argued would alleviate poverty, sort of redistribute wealth that is being hoarded, as they would say, by corporations. But what we saw was a huge, huge backlash from businesses, multinational corporations, you name it, folks that were just sort of clamoring to give money to the opposing side of this. The No on 118 campaign spent more than $15 million, maybe more than $16 by the time all is said and done, far, far outspent the people that were backing this. And that seems to really show in the results. I mean, as I'm looking at it right now, it's like almost 80% of voters voted no. So that thing went down very, very handily. And it's the second time Oregon voters have shot down a sizable corporate tax hike in the last 8 years. This is something that I think ties in with Oregon voters' dislike or distrust of a sales tax. And the folks that were fighting Measure 118 called it a hidden sales tax, something that was going to raise prices. That seemed to be really, really salient.
Mm-hmm. Let me take a quick reset. My guest is Dirk Vanderhart, politics and government reporter with OPB. You can send your questions or comments to jx@jeffnet.org. So what I'm hearing you say is that the business community spent $15 million to kill this measure in order that they would not have to pay a higher rate of tax.
That's correct. Yes. And this would have only impacted businesses that have $25 million or more every year in Oregon sales. That's a very high amount. I mean, it would have been about 2% of businesses that have a presence in Oregon. But those are also the kinds of businesses that have a lot of money to sort of shoot down a measure like this. And I think there was another element at play here too, which is that Measure 118, you know, its chief financial backing came from a relatively small number of donors, wealthy donors who lived in California. These are folks who support this notion, as you mentioned, of universal basic income. They're wealthy, but they think that society needs to do something more to sort of help folks and make sure there's solid footing for people so they don't sort of slip into poverty. And so they poured a good amount of money into this ballot. And I think just that notion probably made at least some voters uncomfortable. This notion that, you know, Californians with a lot of money were trying to use Oregon as a bit of a guinea pig for this this idea of universal basic income. That is something that opponents played up in some cases. And I think it probably is something that voters weren't too big of a fan of.
So it sounded like there were multifaceted influences.
There was a lot. I mean, there's a lot going on. And we should note that, you know, I'm talking about money, but virtually every major political group in the state of all stripes really politically opposed this measure. You know, the Democratic governor, Tina Kotek, opposed it. Labor unions, who are very progressive, opposed it. Big business groups that are more conservative opposed it. Republicans opposed it. Even some of the most sort of liberal, progressive public policy groups that explicitly, you know, support this idea of giving people a basic income opposed it because they didn't like some of the ways it was written. So, you know, there were just a lot of headwinds on Measure 118, and that is certainly reflected in the outcome.
So it's not a total outright rejection of a basic income for people in need, but rather the methodology in which this thing came about.
I think that's right. I think that's right. And again, I think this attack on a policy like this as a hidden sales tax in Oregon has a lot of weight. Just a couple other ballot measures I think we should point to. There was a measure, a proposal to adopt ranked choice voting throughout the state when people are electing statewide officials like the governor or secretary of state or their federal officials, Congress people and senators. That was one that also got a lot of out-of-state spending on the yes side, groups that really support the idea of, you know, when you sit down to fill out your ballot, you're not just picking your one favorite person. You can pick your favorite person and then your second favorite person and maybe your third favorite person. And that changes the way results are tabulated. There is an argument that it makes the person who ultimately wins a person who has at least some support from the majority of voters. But voters here appear to be saying they aren't ready to adopt ranked choice voting statewide. I think not everyone has called this race, but the no side is leading by quite a bit as I look at the results. And so Portland, we have seen adopt ranked choice voting. I think there's some ranked choice voting in Corvallis, but Oregon voters seem to be saying not yet at this point.
Okay, so what's the status?
Well, like I say, you know, there's about a 60% no vote right now as I look at the results, 40 yes. I don't know that all agencies have called this, and certainly I'm not going to make a call if folks smarter than me haven't, but it looks like that one's going to go away.
Okay.
On notable measures that passed, I think we should look at Measure 115. This was a notable one. This brings Oregon in line with every other state in the nation in giving the legislature power to impeach its governor, its secretary of state, its statewide officials. As I say, every other state in the country has some mechanism by which if an official is accused of serious misconduct, the legislature can hold an impeachment hearing in the House, then kick it over to the Senate for a trial. And if that's ultimately successful, that person can be ejected from office. We did not have that, and it looks like we now will. Measure 115, as I look at the results, is passing with about 63% of the vote. I believe it's been called by a lot of news agencies. It feels like that one's gonna prevail. And, you know, this really has roots in a scandal we saw last year where the former Secretary of State, Shamia Fagan, was found to have a pretty questionable consulting contract with a cannabis company that produced all sorts of questions about conflict of interest, and Fagan ultimately resigned. But I think it raised questions for a lot of people about if she had refused, what would, you know, what options existed to get her out of office.
Right. What's the remedy?
Yeah, exactly. And so it looks like there will be more of a remedy now.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, we're running out of time. So give me one more big winner.
Okay, let's talk real quick about the balance of power in Salem. So everyone knew that the Democrats were still going to control the House and Senate at the end of this thing. But I think that what we wanted to know is whether they would have a supermajority that would let them pass taxes on their own. It looks like they have won that supermajority in the Senate. They may be able to squeak it out in the House, but that's a lot less likely. And so I think that it's going to make dynamics pretty interesting when they meet next year,
okay.
Maybe wrestling with a tough budget.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you, Dirk, for your insights.
Thanks,
appreciate
Mike.
It.